Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Join us on Thursday as we explore Pet Health and Homeopathy, a show co-hosted by Homeopathy World Community founder and homeopath Debbie Bruck, and Doctor of Veterinary Medicine, author and homeopath Christina Chambreau. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go!
Okay, we're going to start singing as we go in. And hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, speaking with our co-host, Christina Chambreau, doctor of veterinary medicine. Today is June 7th, 2012, and we have been studying pet behavior. This is about the second one
so far, and we'll have a third one next time.
Okay, well, we're going to keep learning together. And also, I wanted to let you know about Dr. Chambreau. She is currently an adjunct faculty for the Maryland Veterinary Technician Program, lectures widely across the country, and has telephone consulting. So if you need some help with your caring for your pet, you can give her a call. You can check out www.myhealthyanimals.com. And she really listens very carefully to your needs and helps you with your pet. She is the co-author of The Homeopathic Repertory, and is her commitment to demystify homeopathy shows how all healing follows the principles of the organon, regardless of the specific treatment. You will learn more about the power of homeopathic remedies for companion animals and other ways to maximize health. And if you haven't been listening, you better start learning Reiki, because that's the first thing that she tells you to give a try for. Hi, Christina.
Hi.
I hope you're doing well today, and it's a beautiful sunny day where you are.
It is. It's actually a glorious day. I think my banana plant is going to appreciate today.
Wow, a banana plant in the northeast. Well, okay. I have a couple of quotes, and see where you go with these. We've got by Stanley Coren, dog psychologist, and I didn't know there was such a thing, but he says, the greatest fear dogs know is the fear that you will not come back when you go out the door without them.
Okay.
That's the first thing. So I guess you would approach that to say some kind of anxiety going on there. And then the second quote is Dr. Dennis Fetko, who says, in dog training, jerk is a noun, not a verb. I got you to laugh at that one.
I love that. That is beautiful.
Okay, you can set that next to your dog harnesses.
Absolutely.
And the third one is by Corey Ford, who says, every dog should have a man of his own. There is nothing like a well-behaved person around the house to spread the dog's blanket for him or bring him his supper when he comes home man-tired at night.
Oh, that's so true.
Well, that goes for our training session.
And there are, you know, there are times to use a jerk. You know, there are some animals that in the process of training that may be necessary for safety's sake when you're working with an aggressive dog. But if people think about never jerking a dog or a cat, those that are being leash walked, harness walked, that's a really wonderful approach to have it be something very, very rare to be done.
Uh-huh.
So now your comment, though, that the first man saying that the biggest fear that dogs have is the fear that you'll not come back to them.
Yes.
Is I wouldn't interpret that as, that's going back to what we talked about the first time, that we need to make a distinction in using homeopathy to treat animals to see, is it actually an illness? Is it an imbalance in the vital force? Or is it a natural feeling that there isn't anything to do with? And I think the point that's to be made when he's making the observation that a dog's biggest fear is that you won't come back to them is to understand if that's a way that you can understand how your dog is thinking and you can work with them about that. So there are many things that you can do, and that is not all dogs. You know, some dogs don't have that fear at all. But it's not necessarily a pathological fear unless you have separation anxiety. But if you make the assumption, if you say this guy's right and some dog's greatest fear is that you'll not come back to them, then every time you leave, you say to them, I will have a great day, or watch the house, or keep track of the birds in the yard, or whatever their job is, and then say, I will be back in a few hours. I will be back by the time it gets dark. I will be back in four darknesses if you're going away on a trip. I will be back, and there's always Joe will be taking care of you if I don't come back. So it's to tell your dog what's happening, what to expect, what's going on. And if there's not a pathological problem with the vital force, that will be enough.
That makes perfect sense. And way back in 2002, I was taking courses at the Psychology of Health, Immunity, and Disease program, and someone was talking about the relationship between pets and their owners. And there was an experiment going on where someone would go to work, and then, because every single time the person comes home, you know, the dog is wagging the tail or right at the door, mm-hmm. like anticipating, waiting for him or her to come home. And the same thing with cats. They're there also. And they have a sixth sense, or they know they're really in tune with their owner. So they did a test where they would go out and then they would start to come home. So, in other words, the pet would have a sense that they're coming home, and then they would stop and go do something else and to see, to check whether the pet knew would be at the door at the right time. So they changed it midway as if they were signaling mm-hmm. some kind of an ESP. I wish I could tell you the answer to that story. Whether
You don't remember the result?
The result? No, I don't.
Oh, now you've
you're going to have to research that one. But
you've led us on here.
But I think, you know, what you're saying is you're placing this intention and your own anxiety may be reflected in your animal. So if you don't know precisely where you're going and when you're going to be there, they don't have that sense also. Is that possible?
That's possible. I mean, they certainly pick up on our anxiety in general, but it usually doesn't bother them. They just sort of pick up on it. There have been, and I also don't remember the name of this, so I'll preface it with that, but there was an entire book written about, if not that experiment, other experiments that were done, and it documents amazing multiple cases of animals knowing exactly when their owner was coming home.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
So it's it doesn't surprise, the only people who are surprised by that are those that are still mostly thinking in the Cartesian Western scientific model. If you go back to all native people living on the planet, historically as well as today, they know that the entire planet is linked by energy that you can communicate across. And so they know where everybody is at all times if they're in tune with that. I'm not saying they all are, but I think they were called Rainbow Children about 10 years ago. There was lots of reports about children who were being born these days who were actually communicating. Many of them are seen as autistic or learning disabled because they often don't speak until they're much older. And it's because they're communicating psychically with people around the world, especially if they have parents who can communicate psychically with them. And so therefore, it's not a surprise at all that animals do it. Animals are just surprised that we don't do it.
That we don't do it. Or...
Right. They're like, what's wrong with our owners that they don't realize that we're talking to them?
Yes.
So one of the things to do is to take classes in animal communication, to read books about animal communication. I was with somebody the other day, and we all said that our favorite book was Kinship with All Life by J. Allen Boone, which is about a man who learns to communicate with all species of animals, including flies and ants and raccoons, as well as the dog, Strongheart, that he was house-sitting for.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an awesome book that just really does open you up to thinking more along these lines. But if all you do is just go, I don't know if this works or not, I don't know if it makes a difference, but it's not going to hurt me and it's easy to do, then just let your dog know what you're doing, or cat, know what you're doing, number one. And number two, if you're gone for longer than you plan to be, from wherever you are in the world, tell them, I'm here, I'm thinking of you, and I'll be home. Or I'm here, I'm thinking of you, and Jeff is going to come over and take care of you. You are being taken care of.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that, go ahead.
And then if it's an animal who's worried about it, then the animal will feel better.
Mm-hmm. So what this brings me to is consistency. Consistency in, for instance, a pet who knows that at this time of day I'm going to be fed, or I'm going to go for my walk, or my master's coming home. So that form of consistency would give security to an animal, I would imagine.
Well,
not only
not
with
necessarily.
The...
It's more important that you communicate with them,
mm-hmm,
than that you have consistency. The consistency, while some people say that's important, I've seen way too many happy animals who have owners that are just all over the place. But
mm-hmm,
the difference is they've been communicating regularly with the animal and letting them know what's happening.
So is this a cue we should take?
Yeah, I think it'd be a good, I just think it'd be, why not... Even if you don't believe this works, and I forget to do this a lot. It's part of my growth to start remembering this more in my life with my cat. But it's one of the things to do is just include everybody in your life with what you're... It's sort of like a psychic Facebook. You know how people post, okay, I'm going to the store. I mean,
mm-hmm,
I don't have any friends that quite do that, but there are people out there that post everything they're doing on Facebook.
Oh, boy.
So if we do this in our mind and just say, if when I'm out, I say to Ed, okay, I'm on my way home now, or as I head out, okay, Ed, I have no idea when I'm coming home, but I'll be home. And then as I start home, say, okay, Ed, I'm on my way home. I mean, he knows it anyway. I don't necessarily have to say it aloud. But I could also say, okay, Mort, I got that letter in the mail that you wanted me to mail. And if, as more people become tuned to that, more people will get the message that we don't have to communicate via the internet. There's a bigger better internet to connect over?
Our neural network.
Right. The universal hotwires.
Right.
So, you know, and again, who knows? It's we do know it works. I mean, how many times have you gone to telephone somebody and they went, "I was just thinking about you today. I wanted to call you."
All the time.
Well, they did call you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you picked up the phone and called them by the phone. And
right.
In the Ashwar that I talk about in the symposium, Awakening the Dreamer, Changing the Dream, the Ashwar in Ecuador, when the men go hunting, sometime in the evening when they've finished and before they go to bed, they sit down beside a rock and they tap out a message on the rock. And their wife, hours away, hears the message. Is the rock tapping needed? Probably not. But it's probably a way of focusing their mind so that it's a more powerful communication. How cool that we can do that.
Yeah,
and
well,
cool that we can fix things with homeopathy.
Yeah.
You know, if there is, and again, it gets back to the key is there actually a problem that needs to be treated? So in terms of what we've been talking about of leaving, definitely if you have an animal who every time you leave the house rips the pillows into pieces, every time you leave the house pees or poops in the house, every time you leave the house, or occasionally when you leave the house, it may not be every time, barks constantly, and the neighbor tells you they're barking the whole time you're gone, or when one of the family leaves the house, the dog freaks out and panics or sits by the door and won't do anything. But when everybody else in the house leaves the house, they're fine. All of these are related to fear of being left alone. But I wouldn't necessarily always use that rubric. So fear of being alone may apply, and it would be one of the mental rubrics to look at. And other ones would be actually looking at their behavior regardless of the cause. So they could be angry that you've left, or they could be afraid that they're going to be left alone. And sometimes you can tell the difference. Other times you can't tell the difference. So when you're treating behavior cases with homeopathy, one of the things you have to do is be flexible in your thinking. When you're treating diarrhea, you don't necessarily have to think a whole lot of different ways about it. But when you're treating separation anxiety, you do have to think a lot about it. Because it could be fear, it could be anger, it could be irritability, it could be multiple different fears, there could be multiple things. And that's why I do say to begin with Reiki and flower essences, because they're more general and you don't have to be as specific. But if those aren't working or haven't worked enough and you're moving into homeopathy, then you may get some clues, like your intuitive sense is, my dog's scared, I won't come back. Or you may get a sense once you get home that they are ignoring you and that you think they're mad at you. Or the way they destroy things is more malicious, or it's more just frantic. Maybe just things around the door get torn up, or things around the window where that's where they're looking for you and they're being frantic. So this is a normal behavior, according to the man you quoted. It's a normal behavior that is now excessive, so excessive that it's clearly an imbalance in the vital force. So then you use fear of being alone, or there's a beautiful rubric for separation anxiety in the mind section of the repertory that says desires company aggravated while alone. So this is an animal that normally likes company, and when he's left alone, really has trouble and does stuff. And so maybe you start with that rubric along with anything else in other body systems you can use and see what happens. And that doesn't work. and you go, okay, well, let's look at this from another angle then. Maybe the dog's angry. So then you use the anger rubric as your elimination plus the other symptoms you have. And, oh, my gosh, that worked. So it wasn't really fear. It wasn't the being alone, wanting company and feeling bad when you're alone. It was anger at what was being done, mm-hmm. anger at being left alone, anger at not getting their way.
So there are many, many possible remedies for this anger. So the person would really have a tough time figuring out which one.
Well, now remember, we're not just using the one rubric. We're using the mental rubric, whichever one we choose to start with, and we're using other rubrics. You cannot prescribe a remedy on one symptom. So you've got to find some other symptoms. Maybe using the early warning signs of illness, you realize that this is a dog who's on a raw food diet and therefore should have no body odor, shouldn't need a bath to prevent doggy odor, and yet does have doggy odor, needs a bath. And within 2 days after a bath or within a day, it seems like the bath didn't do anything. So there's another symptom. Maybe this dog has had a history tends frequently to have offensive farting. So you could use the farting and the stool and the anger. And if that doesn't do it, then you'd try two or three remedies from that combination of rubrics. If that doesn't do it, you would go into the fear side, and you'd try fear along with the diarrhea and the farting. Now, diarrhea and farting is sort of one body system, so it'd be good to have it in another body system. Well, we did. It was the doggy odor and farting. So that's good. You have a three-legged stool. You have the doggy odor, skin, farting, digestive, and either fear, anger, destructiveness, breaking things, whatever you want to use for the mental. So it is a challenge. And the most important thing is if you don't record what's being done and you aren't tracking all of the symptoms, then it will be very difficult to successfully find the remedy. I was talking today to a client, and the presenting complaint of this cat is a year or two of chronic nasal discharge, green nasal discharge, bleeding from one nostril, and one eye has goop and stuff in the corner. And there aren't a lot of other symptoms. There have been increased thirst. There's been blood in the discharge sometimes. There have been the cat tends to be overweight. And so we've been going through different remedies to see what works. And we changed to a raw diet, and the raw diet changed several of the symptoms. And now after this last remedy, what she noticed is now, first the discharge went away, and it started coming back when she stopped giving the remedy daily. So you're now thinking, well, is this palliation? Because symptoms gone, as long as the remedy is being given, and it returns, albeit slowly, when the remedy was stopped. However, she was surprised because she wasn't focused on the whole cat. She was just focused on the eye and the nose. When, within a few days of giving the remedy, the cat started jumping up on the windowsill and looking out the window. The cat started, instead of just jumping into her lap, would jump on the desk, which was higher, and then down into her lap. The dog was standing at the door of the room it stayed in and was watching the dog. So there was an increase in engagement and in interaction. So the behavior changed with this cat. So that says, hey, we're probably on to the right remedy, and we may need a different potency to give it for longer. So there's all that judgment to be done. But this woman loves details. So she was focused just on the nose and the eye. So if you had an animal who had separation anxiety, you may focus just on that, but you have to look at all the symptoms. So she now has a list of 8 symptoms to track, and because she's a detailed person, she loves that. My saying, look at the whole animal, didn't work for her. But to say, look at these specific symptoms, worked. So we have the nose, the eye, the engagement / the neediness sitting in her lap, the agility, being able to jump up on things, the thirst, the weight, the coat, which is now good after the raw food, and the appetite, which is now normal after the raw food change. But now she has a list of 8 symptoms to track. So that's the only way you can tell if the remedies that you're using are effective or not, if your choices are good or not, is by tracking all of the symptoms and by having a good 3-legged stool.
It's nice to have a checklist to go by, because mm-hmm. it gives the owner something to do also, to know that they're tracking all of the possible details. So, you mentioned earlier on this potential case, maybe hypothetical case, that a dog might get into this misbehavior only when one of the persons mm-hmm. in the house left but is fine otherwise. What do you do with that? Where do you go with the rubrics?
Well, you do the same thing. First, you look to see if there's a rubric that says either fear that one person will leave or delusion.
I don't know of a roof. I don't know of that.
Delusion of delusion that only one person in the family likes them, or so you'd start looking for that, and then if you can't find that, because we always look for the most specific. So first you look for the most specific, and then you go to the more general. So the more general would be fear of being left alone. So even though there are other people there, to this dog, the other people don't really exist. So mm-hmm. it's a fear that they're going to be left alone.
What about the rubric forsaken?
Right. Forsaken is definitely one of the ones when they feel they're going to be left alone. That is one of the two major ones with separation anxiety is forsaken, and people might think about that as being abandoned, fear of being abandoned. And if you look up abandoned, it sends you to forsaken, so you don't have to remember it necessarily. And the other is the desire for company aggravated while alone.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, as you can see, as we're thinking about these rubrics, it's often one of the challenges is to find the correct, is to find the rubric that matches what we think is going on for the animal. So, and there's, in Kent's repertory, there are 95 pages for the mental section. And so you'd have to thumb through 95 pages to be able to find abandoned or angry or, I mean, you could look it up, but it might not be there because there might be a synonym for it that you have to look up. So what I have, one of the homework assignments that I give everybody who takes any of my classes is to go through the entire repertory and do this, but particularly the mind section is and generalities is important, but we're talking about behavior. So in the mind section, if you simply open your repertory and go through the different rubrics and you write down each rubric in a list, of course I'd type it on the computer now, you write down each rubric that you think would apply to animals, that you think you understand at least a little bit. So I would start, and so I ended up with a list of 4 short pages the size of Kent's repertory, the height of my Kent's repertory, just so they would fit in the book. So let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So it looks like I have about 30 words on a page, and I have 4 pages of that. So I have 120 words that I can look through in a second as opposed to paging through the repertory. So instead of 96 pages, I have 4 pages to look at. So it makes it much easier. So the repertory, the first one is abandoned. So I would write down abandoned, and beside it I would say see forsaken. The next one is abrupt. Well, you could maybe really generalize that a dog that looked at you and barked and then walked off was being abrupt. But I think that's way too much of a guessing game here, way too anthropomorphizing. So I wouldn't put abrupt on it. The next one is absent-minded. So you have to think, are dogs absent-minded or forgetful? They actually are. We can see dogs and cats, particularly when they get older or when they have a mental disorder, like a encephalitis or seizure disorder, that type of thing, that can be forgetful. It's not very common, but it's possible. And then you leave out all the sub-rubrics, like forget absent-minded while reading. Although there's another sub-rubric, and you don't write any sub-rubrics down. But if you were looking at this, if you went, oh, yeah, my dog is absent-minded, then you go look at absent-minded, and it's periodical attacks of short-lasting absent-mindedness. You would go, hey, that may fit my dog. Then as you go through, you'd come to something like air castles. See theorizing. Well, that doesn't apply to animals, so you're not going to put that one on your list. Amusement, averse to amusement, desire for amusement. Maybe. I guess you could put that down, but I would go more to plays, to playing. And then anger, you're going to save a whole page there. Aversion to answers, answers abruptly, curtly, shortly, those aren't going to apply because that's verbal. So you see how you don't put, you just put down those that you think will apply to animals, and it makes it so much easier to look through the repertory.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good assignment. It might be nice to have that little 120 rubric sitting by your side.
Now, if you have any of the computer programs, of course, you can do a search for whatever word you think it is, and they'll give you synonyms. If you're looking at the synthesis either, I mean, or and the complete, either the book or the computer program, they've done a lot of this work for us. So they've put in a lot of synonyms so that we can look to see if all the synonyms seem fairly related to what we thought was the right rubric, then you can go, oh, I think that probably fits. I think I am in the right ballpark here. But if all the synonyms are like, don't seem to apply at all, then you say, okay, that one doesn't work. Let me look at something else.
Did you have other kinds of pet behavior that you thought is commonly disturbing for...
Oh, there are tons. So another one is, we talked about this last week, was when animals are barking when the owner is on the phone. So we did that. Another one is defecation outside the litter box. Now, again, the first thing you're going to do when that happens is to say, are there any physical causes of this? Is it because I just changed the litter? Is it because the cat has arthritis and can no longer get into the litter box? Is it that the litter box is in a place that this cat is scared to go to because there's noise there? Many people put litter boxes in the laundry room, and some cats, you'll notice that if the machine is on, or if maybe one time the load was unbalanced and that really loud noise that goes off when your washing machine is out of balance, it may have scared the cat just when they were going to the bathroom, and so they don't want to go in there anymore. So you have to do a lot of experimenting with litter box. But as you're working through that, you can also look at different rubrics. So one could be intolerance and anger from contradiction, or bad effects. So that I would use that one pretty much. It could be that if they're, and you have to think about this, do they not use the litter box when they're mad at you? When they aren't getting their way, do they go to the litter box? I mean, do they avoid the litter box? Do they go on your bed or in your suitcase when you're packing for a trip?
Well, is this passive-aggressive? How do you look that up?
Well, one of the things is the rubric contradiction, intolerance, and anger from.
Okay.
So that's one. Another would be dictatorial. That's wanting to have things your way.
Mm-hmm.
Another one would be contrary. Another would be manipulative, probably not manipulative for that one. If a cat continues to persist in going to a particular location, you could use obstinate. And in general, once you stop and start thinking about this, you'll realize that the animals are showing it in multiple ways. It's usually not just in one area. If it's a vital force imbalance, you're going to see it in different parts of the animal's behavior. And then here's another one that's really bad, of course, is growling, aggression, anger. That's something that is a lot of animals end up back in the shelter because of being aggressive, you know, or they're euthanized. And so we definitely need to be looking at those rubrics.
How many rubrics are there under that?
Oh, there are tons, if you think about it, because you have to...
I was thinking that the other rubrics that
you
can...
So what are some you would think of for an angry dog? A dog that's biting, a dog that's growling, a dog that's attacking. What are some rubrics you would think of?
Oh, I'm not looking in my book, but let's see.
That makes it harder. I am.
Yeah, you're. I was going to say that the other rubrics that you mentioned for the passive-aggressive type, I'm thinking of little children also who behave that what we call, we say they act out. And these are the ways that they get attention. So maybe seeks attention for the other one. For this one, for aggression, anger, growling. I can only think of, in my mind, barking. I know they have. Is there one for growling?
Well, there are, but those you wouldn't use because how do dogs communicate?
Oh, they're
barking
speaking.
And growling.
Okay.
How do crazy people communicate? Some crazy people with specific ailments bark or growl. So those you can't use. Just like in the mind section, mind desires stool. You can't use that for dogs eating stool because a person eating a stool is a really, really, really bizarre, ill thing.
Oh,
a dog eating a stool is pretty normal in many ways.
Really?
Well, it's not, you know, it's on the early warning signs that if a dog is eating carnivore stool, that's an indication they're not healthy. However, it's normal in the wild for dogs to eat pretty much anything and everything. So they do eat cow stool and rabbit stool, and that's all very normal. Dogs get stuff off the ground. People don't get stuff off the ground. So there are definitely rubrics in the repertory, this people repertory, that don't apply to animals. And we want to be tracking, I'll report on this later, but Dr. Pitcairn does have a repertory for animals that he's putting together, he and Wendy Jensen from New Hampshire. So I'll report on the status of that and how to get hold of it.
Okay.
So some of the anger, to go back to the question of the anger while we finish, we'll probably finish up on that here, is, have we had any questions? Anybody in the chat room?
Nope. I don't see.
Last week we were
a couple of people there, but no questions right now.
Okay,
but I'm still kind of thinking.
Here we go on angry ones.
Okay,
so angry ones. It depends on again why you think they're doing it. But let's just say it's like a really angry, violent kind of person, as opposed to it's because they're afraid they're going to be abandoned and therefore they act out angrily. So you can use anger, biting. Biting is okay to use there, even though people biting, it's usually in children or mentally ill people, but biting translates well enough. When dogs are clearly biting out of anger, not just biting because they want you to stop brushing them, and so that's their way of saying, I'm done. Contrary, cruelty. There are some animals that appear to actually be cruel. It's very rare, but it is sometimes we see this. Destructive, disobedience, distrustful. Now, again, disobedience, you've got to make sure that it's not that you haven't miscommunicated to them. If you have a dog you've trained well or a cat that's been well behaved and all of a sudden is now being totally disobedient, then that's an okay thing to use. Distrustful or suspicious. Fury. Fight, wants to fight. Hatred. And we often see aggression as part of the rabies miasm, so I would usually use hydrophobia in there as well, because our rabies vaccine being repeated so often can really cause problems.
How would a person know what this hydrophobia means and how to...
You would just have to know that any time an animal has behavior problems, it may be linked to the rabies vaccine. So you look to see when the vaccine was given and if the behavior started after that or was made worse after that. And then it's just a matter of knowing your repertory, which is what Karen Allen and my book, The Homeopathic Repertory, a Tutorial, is all about, is learning what do the words mean in the repertory. So you just have to know that rabies miasm is hydrophobia.
Okay.
And then let's see. See, I'm going through my list. Malicious, possibly,
malicious.
But again, usually not. Mischievous. The anger could be just mischievous. Quarrelsome, rage.
I have one here. It says impertinence.
Yeah, oh, impertinence would be a mild one. Impertinence is a little more people-oriented. I would be stretched to use impertinence.
It says to look up insolent and rudeness.
Yeah, see, all of those, and that's the thing. When you look at the synonyms they give you, when you look at the other rubrics they send you to, it helps you evaluate whether this is true. So now think about what all of those words mean. All of those have something to do with culture.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody being rude is simply, they're just simply being rude because in the culture they're in, they're doing something that's considered rude. Somebody said, in this culture, you don't clap your hands. That means a negative. So it's like if you go to other countries and you do something that you wave hello, which is normal here, and over there that means you're a dick.
Oh, boy.
And so you're being rude doing something you thought was normal. So that wouldn't be an energy field imbalance. But if you went to that country and knew it was rude and you did it on purpose, then that would be the vital force imbalance, rudeness. But that's not something for animals because that's cultural. So
mm-hmm.
I don't think impertinence or rudeness or the third one you mentioned would apply to animals.
Okay.
So that's pretty much the list for angry mm-hmm. animals. I want to, we'll talk
well,
about
you know what
more.
It says? Mm-hmm. There's a very big rubric that says irritability.
Yes, I mentioned that one. That's a good one.
It's a long list of remedies there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But again, you would go with irritability when you have a big general rubric, you go down to the sub-rubrics, and then you see if any of the sub-rubrics fit.
Mm-hmm.
So here's one that would apply for animals that are destructive when their people are away from home, or might apply. Irritability with absent persons.
Oh, good one.
Okay, so as you read them, you can see that how irritability consolation aggravates. So there you have an irritable animal. When you try to make up with them, they get worse. Irritability after eating, you may see occasionally. Irritability from noise, definitely you'll see that. Irritability when spoken to. So then you go into the sub-rubrics.
Right. So if anybody is out there and they are listening and want to go through, this is the mind rubric in Kent's repertory, it's a good idea to get a yellow highlighter or whatever color you like and just mark up which ones might apply to your pets.
You may want to do that, or you may want to just do it on a separate sheet. A lot of the repertories, if you use a yellow highlighter, it goes through the page.
Oh.
So you have to be careful about that. Different editions, whether they're Indian or American, give you different things. So,
quality paper.
Yeah, right. Now, I want to wrap up today, given that vaccines often cause behavior problems, I want to wrap up. I just, on our list, veterinary listserv, we present cases that maybe we're having some difficulty with. And this case has us all so angry at conventional veterinarians, that at this one specific conventional veterinarian, that it's just a reminder to me, everybody listening to this tape, please remember that in every vaccine is a package insert that says for use in healthy animals only. So this case is a 16-year-old dog that has a huge tumor in its chest. When it came in for surgery, they vaccinated it for distemper, hepatitis, leptospirosis, parvovirus, and rabies just prior to surgery.
That makes no sense.
It's an old dog, no sense. It's an ill dog. No sense. It has cancer. No sense. So people must be vigilant at every vet clinic you're at. Put a note in your record, this dog, cat, alpaca, horse is not to be vaccinated ever without permission from the owner. This was just ridiculous. And post-surgery, this dog is having a horrible time and came to the homeopath for help with their seromas and all sorts of problems from the surgery. So probably because it may be because it was weakened by the vaccines. So I want to end on that. Remember, stay in charge of your animal's health and your own health.
Yeah.
Well, and but we'll do more next week. Think about other behavior things and if anybody, you know, those of you who are on listening today, think of any behavior problems and drop an email. But I definitely have others that we'll go through.
Okay. Well, it sounds like today we really concentrated on anger quite a bit, and you ended.
And fear. We did fear and anger.
And fear and anger. You kind of ended on a little angry note.
Yes.
Did you
notice
that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, because it was it hurts when you see a mistake made, something that could have been prevented.
Yep.
Something that was done without thinking. And how do we, you know, I want to go look up in my repertory what I'm thinking now about these people who do this type of action.
They're not doing it to be mean. They're just thoughtless.
They're
the rubric would be thoughtless.
They are thoughtless.
Uh huh.
But I'm talking about you and I.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm talking about, you know, when something happens to your pet and the owner is angry, but because they were, what is the word for how you feel when?
Well, but there's no point in looking that up, really, because that's a normal reaction. You don't want to treat it with a remedy.
Oh, Okay.
You don't ever, ever, ever treat normal behaviors.
Okay,
with
so
remedies.
So, I mean, we have a right to feel this way.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
But then how do we deal with it? We go out and we do a radio show and we send a warning to the listeners,
right,
that this is how you prevent this from happening,
yep,
to you.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Okay, I'm going to sign off and you're
okay,
going to finish it up, okay?
Very good. Take
Talk
care.
Talk to you
I'll
all next week.
Bye-bye. So here I am, folks. We have a few minutes left, and then we're going to have a show with Alan Phillips about vaccinations and your rights, which leads right into the show. And he might be coming on a little bit late today because he has a graduation ceremony for his son that he's participating in. And therefore, I'm going to be starting the show about vaccines. I would like to remind everyone that we've got a number of shows both on Blog Talk Radio and The Health Inn, which occurs on Mondays. We have The Health Inn show. We're going to come up with part two of talking about migraines. And right now I see some folks are on Homeopathy World Community, and they are on the live chat. So I hope some of those people are listening. And we're going to have Dr. Ajay Yadav coming on Monday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, USA, to the Health Inn show talking about migraines in men. Last Monday, we did migraines in women. And so this is a problem that people have, these headaches that are chronic, and there are ways to deal with them that we will be talking about. Also, on Monday evening, we usually have our show with Grant Bentley about facial analysis. That is on vacation for the summer. We'll be back again with that. But remember, all of our shows on Blog Talk Radio are archived. Therefore, you can come in to Homeopathy World Community and do it. And also, you can go on Blog Talk Radio and look at the archives. On Wednesday morning, we have fabulous shows with Dr. Adil Chimthalawala-Kasim about our heart. And we've been doing the last number of shows exactly what we did today with Dr. Christina Chambreau. We are looking at specifically the chest section of Kent's repertory, the Homeopathic Materia Medica with the word index. And we go much, much slower through each and every rubric given, except for the delusions. We're skipping over the mind delusion remedies, and we're getting down to hard facts. And he gives stories, experiences, explanations, and what Christina talked about as synonyms, he gives the understanding of what the old-time vernacular was and what it means. So if you have your book, I do like to write in there. For instance, we were up to letter C. We were talking about cicatrices, which are scars. So you need to know how to look that up and what word to find in order to get the correct remedy. We were even able to write in new remedies that he says works very well for each of those. So perhaps your pet would have a scar that needs to be healed. And so it's a good thing to listen to his shows on Wednesday morning. They're now at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Then we have the two shows on Thursday, and that covers our shows. But we also have the resource of both homeopathyworldcommunity.com, where all of the articles are open for the public to read. And we've got thousands of articles about all kinds of illnesses, diseases, concerns. And if you look at the forum menu up at the top and you click on the drop-down menu to forum categories, you can see from A to Z, or A to Y, because the last one is yoga and other healing modalities, a plethora of selections of things that you might want to look into. Everything from things that you can do, political action activities regarding your saving your health freedom or cancer treatments, even some social networking ideas, and all the way down, as I said, to yoga and even urine therapy. We've got everything, plus agriculture. We've got agrohomeopathy and concerns about the bees and how to make your garden grow, just everything. So get in there and take a look. And for those folks, and remember, that is a professional network for homeopaths. But if you want to get involved, we have Facebook Homeopathy World Community. You can become a member there. And get onto the Twitter and tweet these shows, Facebook these shows. Do whatever you can to promote and help grow the listener base of Homeopathy World Community, both on Blog Talk Radio and the Health In shows. That way we are spreading waves of awareness to know that homeopathy is an approach, an energetic healing modality that's been around for over 200 years, and it does work. We have evidence based to that fact. So I'm going to close this show, and in about 4 minutes, 3 or 4 minutes, we're going to start up again with Vaccinations and Your Rights in the United States with Alan Phillips, attorney at law. See you then.
Thank you for listening to Pet Health and Homeopathy on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopaths Debbie Brook and Dr. Christina Chambreau. We encourage you to follow our show, click the reminder button to receive email notices when show airs, share with friends on Facebook and Twitter, and send in your comments and questions. See you next time!